do a prayer. Oh, it's okay, no problem. Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashadashajayinim Ambatvam Anusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini. So we're on verse chapter 15, verse 16. Yeah.
Too late now.
Ready? Twavimau Purushau Loke. Dvavimau purushau loke charaschakshara evacha charaschakshara evacha charasarvani bhutani charasarvani bhutani kutastokshara uchate kutastokshara uchate utamah purushastvanyaha utamah purushastvanyaha Paramatme tudharataha, Paramatye tudharataha, Yolokatrayam avishya, Yolokatrayam avishya, Biparucha vyaya ishwaraha, Biparucha vyaya ishwaraha. Sandhi. Dwau imau. You see that dwav? That's dwau, okay? Dwau imau purushau loke ksharaha cha aksharaha eva cha. Ksharaha sarvani bhutani kutastaha aksharaha uchate. Uttamaha purushaha tu anyaha. Do you see that? Uttamaha purushaha tu anyaha paramatma iti udahritaha yaha lokatrayam avishya viparati. See that one? Viparati avyayaha.
What are we supposed to
see? That has an E and an O, okay. Biparati avyayaha ishwaraha. Okay? He says, in this world, loke, dwau imau purushau, this is in the nominative dual, there are two purushas. There are these imau purushau, there are two purushas in this world, loke. So dwau means two, imau means these two. So these two, purushau. There are these two purushas loke in the world. Kshadaha and aksharaha. We'll see what kshara and akshara means, but these are the names of the two. The first purusha is called kshara, second is akshara. Kshara means that which is continually changing, mutable. Akshara, immutable, something which is, doesn't change at all. So the kshara and the akshara. So in this world, loke, there are these two purushas. One is called kshara and one is called akshara. Okay. Indeed, avacha. Kshara, that ancha means and. So and the, in this world, there are two purushas. One, kshara, means immutable, changing. One is akshara, changeless. The ksharaha, the one that is mutable, that is changing, is sarvani bhutani, all beings. Everything that exists within duality, right? All beings. Beings can be living beings, but also it can be the bhutas, the five elements, and all living beings. So ksharaha sarvani bhutani. And the aksharaha uchate, the akshara, right, is called the kutasta. The kutasta is the kuta means like an anvil. That which is abiding on an anvil means the akshara here, because we're still within Maya, the akshara here is that into which all the Maya, the unmanifest Maya, the Karana Sharira means the causal body, into which the whole manifest Maya resolves into. That's called kutasta. That's called akshara. What's interesting here is, well, we're going to do the next verse and then I'll go through it all, but what's interesting here, and this is, you find this in the Mundaka Upanishad also, is that there are two aksharas. There are two akshara purushas, two where everything is in a manifest condition. One is the Maya Upadi, right? The prajna, the Maya Upadi, the deep sleep state for the jiva, but the Maya Upadi in causal condition is unmanifest. So all the nama rupa, all of the names and forms are unmanifest. The other is consciousness itself. Consciousness is in unmanifest condition in reference to the manifest creation. So consciousness is the ultimate unmanifest. But the Maya itself is akshara. It's when the whole universe resolves into Maya, the unmanifest Maya, the karana, the causal body. But that causal body itself is dependent on the unmanifest consciousness. So here we're saying the akshara in terms of the Maya Upadi, that which is responsible for the manifestation of the creation, right? That is called, being here called kutasta. Kutasta is usually a word that is used just for Brahman. But here in this context, Krishna is using kutasta for the akshara, means the unmanifest Maya. And so now in the next verse, let's just go through these two verses so we can see what we're working. He says, Uttamaha purushaha tu anyaha. However, tu means however, there is an anyaha, another one. There's another one. That one is called the Uttamaha purusha. The Uttama means the supreme purusha. Uttama purusha means the one for whom there is no other. There is no one, there is no other karana. There is no other cause underlying that one. So the Uttama is the final purusha, the one which has no cause, the uncaused cause is the Uttama, that one which is final, which is supreme. So he says, whereas there's these two purushas, the kshara and the akshara, but then there's this other anyaha, but there's this other one that is the Uttama purusha, and that one, udahritaha, is called iti. Iti means thus, puts it in quotes, the Paramatma, the self which is Parama. Parama means that self which is desha kalavastu aparichedaha, means that self which it cannot be limited by space, desha, or kala by time, or vastu by any type of objectification. So that self which is limitless, is free from any limitation at all. That's the Atma, the self, which is Parama, which is another word for supreme, but supreme doesn't mean anything to us, so we have to define it. The self which has absolutely no limitation. So there's the Kshara Purusha, there's two in the loka, in the world, there's two Purushas. That which is this whole manifest creation we call Virat or Hiranyagarbha, means the whole manifest world and the manifest jiva, either on the Sukshma Sharira, the subtle level, or the Stula Sharira, physical level, this whole creation that exists within time and space, whether subtle or gross, that's kshara. Because everything that we experience within time, within the manifest universe, is subject to change. It's subject to time, subject to change. Subject to change means it's subject to birth and death. The causal condition of this manifestation is not subject to change. It's causal. Within the causal condition, there is no experience of duality. Just like for you, for as a jiva, when you go into deep sleep, in the deep sleep condition, there is no time within that condition, right? Because there's no change. There's no manifestation of any type of objectivity. There's no duality there. There's no difference. So there's in deep sleep state, within that state, there's no time and space, right? And so from the standpoint of the deep sleep state, there is no change. Because everything is in its causal unmanifest condition. So you can see, understand that in reference to your own experience of deep sleep, where it's a causal condition, there's no duality present at that time, so there's no change. That is akshara. The whole creation goes into deep sleep, as though we don't call it deep sleep. It goes into unmanifest, an unmanifest condition, which when we're talking about the whole infinite Maya Upadi, which is responsible for the manifestation of the whole creation, subtle and gross, when that goes into its causal condition, Swamiji will call it unmanifest knowledge. And he will call it, I just love this way of defining the manifest creation as manifest knowledge and the unmanifest creation as unmanifest knowledge, because it brings it to what it actually is in terms of, it equates it very beautifully to your own experience. Like, if I ask you to think right now of, say, a redwood tree, I don't think you were thinking of a redwood tree. So the redwood tree was there in unmanifest condition. It's unmanifest knowledge, because it's there, right? But it's unmanifest. When I ask you to think of one, then your version or your knowledge of redwood tree comes into manifestation. So that's manifest knowledge. So we can say the kshara purusha, the being, the purusha, that is kshara, is the one subject to change, subject to birth and death, is like the manifest tree that you just imagined, right? It comes into manifestation, it's there for some time, and then it passes away. It's true in terms of your vrittis, in terms of your thought modifications, but it's also true of just the very nature of the world. Every object in the world, every situation in the world is kshara, continually changing. But it comes into being, goes out of being. But that causal condition, from that standpoint, there's no change whatsoever. That's akshara. There's no change, because in that condition there's no manifestation of duality. And that akshara purusha is not something which comes into being and goes out of being. The Maya itself is beginningless, just Ishwadas, the Atman, the Self, the Uttama Purusha, that other one, right, which is the very being of the Akshara and Akshara, the Akshara and the Akshara. That consciousness itself, we don't say that it's beginningless. We don't say conscious being is beginningless. We say it is timeless. It's a little subtle difference. When you say beginning, it has a sense of continuity. You could say it's beginningless. It means there's a sense of continuity, but there's no beginning to that sense of continuity. So we say that the Maya, which has for its being, for the Satyam, for its truth, the Self, which is beginningless, and that Maya as an incidental attribute of Brahman, of the Self, is as beginningless as the Self is timeless, because nobody created the Maya. Brahman can't create anything, conscious being can't create anything, because there's no duality. What is it going to create? And so consciousness itself, conscious being itself, has Maya as an incidental attribute. It's not that it decided, oh, let me make some Maya. That means that it would be something in a dual world that had materials and hands and legs and a brain and all of this in order to create something. The non-dual means one without a second, just pure conscious being, is not going to create anything. With what will it create? There's no duality there. There's no second thing there to create anything. So consciousness just simply is. And that consciousness, which is the very ground, the very truth of the whole Maya Upadi. It's simply what is actually here is consciousness. And all of these names and forms that we experience through something that is also, this is a nice way to look at it, this world that we experience is being experienced through something which we also experience. Let me explain. I experience this world or this room, I'm experiencing it through my eyes. Because of my eyes, I'm seeing you. Because of my ears, I'm hearing you. Right? But my eyes, I also experience. But the eyes are also an experience. The subject is, I can say just on a superficial level, my sense organs are the subject and you're all the object. Right? Through me, through my sense organs, these instruments, I perceive you. So I'm the subject, the sense organs are the subject, you're all the object. But my sense organs, I also experience. The very things that allow me to experience you, I experience. Because I know how they're functioning or if they're not functioning. I'm aware of them. I objectify them. So these sense organs, they also are experienced. And just like all of this world that is experienced is subject to change and birth and death, the sense organs also, which are experienced, are subject to birth and death and change, etc. And I can say, and also I'm experiencing my sense organs because I have a mind that's aware of them. But the mind also is experienced. The very one that experiences the thoughts, the very one that experiences the emotions, you know, that the mind has emotions, the mind has thoughts, the mind uses the sense organs to have perceptions. And so this experiencer, the mind which is an experiencer, itself is experienced, right? Itself is objectified. And these things, this is all the kshara purusha. What is experienced includes in it both the subject and the object, right? What is experienced here in this universe includes equally subject and object. It includes the sense organs and the sense objects. It includes the mind which experiences the sense organs, which then experiences the sense object. So the subject, that I take to be the subject, right, is as experienced as the objects which the subject experiences. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's very important. When you have a dream, it's obvious in the dream, right? The dream character experiences through the dream sense organs and mind the dream experiences, the dream perceptions, the dream thoughts. But the dream character with the dream perceptions and the dream thoughts is also experienced. It is known, right? So the subject and object within duality themselves have an uttama purusha, right? So there's levels here. Within this creation, there's the experiencer and the experienced, means the jiva is the experiencer and the experienced. This whole creation, which includes the experiencer and the experienced, resolves into the akshara purusha, into the causal condition, into that purusha, means the Brahman really with this maya upadi that is capable of manifesting this whole thing. You can understand it with the dream. Your dream resolves into unmanifest condition. Comes from unmanifest condition, resolves into unmanifest condition. But that unmanifest condition that we call the akshara purusha also has a self. Beautiful when you think about it in the dream. Your dream has a self. That self is free of both the akshara, the unmanifest condition, and the manifest condition. My being is not dependent upon the dream. My being, if we want to look at it in terms of the Mandukya Upanishad, my being, this conscious being that I am, this me, is present, is awake to the waking state, to the dream state, and to the deep sleep state. I'm awake to all three states of experience. I don't go to sleep. Consciousness doesn't go to sleep. Go to sleep. Going to sleep requires duality. There's a waking state, a dream state, a deep sleep state. They negate each other. When the deep sleep state is there, the waking state isn't there. When the dream state is there, the deep sleep and the waking state aren't there. So these states of experience negate each other, but I am the self of all three. When I'm in the deep sleep, the mind is not, it's in the akshara. It's in the akshara purusha. When the mind is in the deep sleep, it's in its causal condition. So your mind isn't going to say, oh, I'm in deep sleep. Because the ones that would say that or think about that are in causal condition. Your being doesn't talk. Consciousness doesn't talk. You need a mouth to talk. You need eyes to see. You need a mind to think. Right? So these instruments that make the jiva, the instruments that allow you to think, that allow you to have emotions, that allow you to have sense organs, are totally dependent for their conscious being upon you. That's why, and there's no distance between conscious being and the mind, or conscious being and the sense organs. There's no distance at all, just like there's no distance between the clay and the pot. But without the mind, You know, if the mind and all of the mind and all of these perceivables are the kshara purusha, everything that's manifested, the kshara. What does kshara mean? Everything in this field of experience of duality has a beginning and an end. It's subject to birth and death. It's coming and going, coming and going. Its causal condition does not come and go. There's no duality there. And the self of that maya doesn't come and go. Consciousness is always consciousness. But your being, even right now, you can notice it. And in fact, to gain self-knowledge, you must notice it. That's what we're making you notice. Is that right now, you are not doing anything. There's two things happening. There's the body, mind, sense organs, all their mitya, like the pot, they all enjoy you. They have no distance whatsoever from me. But as all of this activity is going on, all these perceptions going on, the thought, I don't like the noise. I'm not sure it's not Tibby.
So, it's not Tibby?
I don't think it is, but
Peter's going to check it out.
There's another that big cat's been around. So anyway, the conscious being that you are, while all this activity is going on, you are very much there. You're the self of all of the activity, but you're not changing. You're not changing at all. You're not covered at all. You're not changing at all. That's what has to be recognized. That's why, you know, as you're talking, you're not talking. As you're seeing, you're not seeing. This isn't some magic trick. You know, people think, do all kinds of things with these verses. Seeing and not seeing. So what people will think, unless this is unfolded properly, is that, because I've experienced people talking like this. So you see me talking right now. Okay. You're all seeing me talking, but I don't see me talking. Like I'm not having any experience of this world.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Kind of creepy.
Very creepy, isn't it? That's not at all what's meant. What's meant is you have the same experience of the world that you had before, with your same sense organs in your mind, and everything is functioning. But you recognize that amidst all of this functioning, while you're seeing, while you're hearing, while you're talking, while you're feeling, while you're thinking, your being is free. It's not doing those things. You are absolutely stable as all of these functions are taking place. And the consciousness is not something that can become unconscious. That's why we say consciousness itself is self-evident, right? Self-shining. It doesn't turn off. You know, so your conscious being is ever present as me. And whatever your mind is doing, like say, this is the whole knowledge, and this is so often not understood. You are you. Nothing can change that me. Nothing can cover it. Nothing can change it. You are always present to whatever is going on in your mind and through your sense perceptions, whatever is going on. You are always fully present. Now, what if you have a really depressed thought, really dark thought? Is the dark thought like a dark cloud covering you? I'd say no, not at all. You are there illumining the dark cloud. You're never covered. But you don't like the dark cloud. It's not the dark cloud that the mind doesn't say, oh, how nice to have this horrible dark cloud. We don't want the dark cloud. That's not the point. The point is that the dark cloud or the light cloud or the beautiful Ananda cloud, you know, freedom of all clouds, nothing is happening to you. Nothing is happening to your being. See? So that being that does not come and go, that does not require a mental state to shine, is the being, is the you that has to be recognized. Anything short of that is where you say, is the dependence upon, where you think that moksha is dependent upon a mental state. Or you think that the self-recognition is dependent upon a mental state. It's not dependent on a mental state. In this sense, you're listening to Swamiji, you're gaining this knowledge. You haven't quite gotten it yet. in terms of this example, you haven't quite gotten it yet. And so you think you're understanding, but somehow the feeling is that when you're in the classroom, because a lot of times in the classroom, your mind becomes very, very quiet, and you see something, you know. But what you're seeing is a quiet mind in which your being is shining in its own way. Okay? Your being is shining in its own way as a reflection in the mind. Right? It's kind of like a clear mirror reflecting the sun. You know? So then you walk out of the class, and that quiet, absorbed mind that feels so at peace and so at home and so comfortable because it's totally harmonious with your own being, that mind goes away. Right? That mind goes away, and the old agitated mind comes back. And then you'll go to Swamiji and say, Swamiji, I saw so... Was that Tibby?
No.
Okay. I saw so clearly, and now it's gone. But what's happened there is there's a total identification with the state of mind as being the self. What has to happen, there has to be a shift where you recognize the self that's present, whatever the state of mind is, and that's the reality. That's the tricky little jump that a person has to make, because your self is never, ever, ever not there. That self is the Uttama Purusha.
Mm.
The Uttama Purusha is the Paramatma. Paramatma means your being which can never not be there. Your being that is the self, the very being of all experience. You know, if I use the clay pot example, it has every drishtanta, every illustration has limitations. So the limitation with the clay pot is that in our mind we see the I am moving the clay around. The clay stays as clay, but I am moving it, changing it into a pot shape. And then I'm changing that material clay into a plate. So I get confused there. So what you have to think about in terms of that illustration is that clayness doesn't become changed, it's clayness. Clay remains as clay. And these nama-rupas, these names and forms, are actually what is changing. The clay's not changing at all. The form pot is changing into a plate, is changing into a tumbler. Clay is not changing. Clay is the changeless substance which all of these nama-rupas are, these names and forms are enjoying. But still, there's a limitation there because even though the clay doesn't, in the drishtanta, because even though the clay itself doesn't lose its clayness as it becomes a pot and plate and clay ball, whatever, clay isn't non-dual. Clay is different than space, it's different from the table, it's different from cloth, it's different from this body. So clay is not non-dual, and so as you change it within space. But you change the shape of the clay within space. But here, you are non-dual. Your being is non-dual. That means there is nothing else. There's no possibility of it, of non-dual awareness shifting into a non-dual awareness pot, or a non-dual awareness becoming a tumbler, or a non-dual awareness becoming the creation. Non-dual awareness doesn't become. Non-dual awareness is non-dual. There is no other thing that exists at all. And so there's no room for another thing in non-duality. That means that this, why we call this Maya, an incidental attribute, means it belongs to Brahman. It doesn't belong anywhere else. But it has no independent being at all. You can't categorize Maya as existing or as not existing. Just like really, the pot is Maya. It's mitya. Maya is the what can allow for there to be such a thing as a pot. It's Maya because you can't say that it's there as an existent thing. Because what is there is clay. But you can't say it's not there either. Because it's useful. We experience it. That is what we mean by mitya. Mithya means that which can't be categorized as being actually a real thing, nor can it be categorized as tuchin being not there at all. But here we experience it. That is this creation. We experience this creation, you know. But when you analyze it, try to find something here, you can't find anything. Because everything here is infinitely divisible into smaller and smaller and smaller parts. Everything here comes into being and goes out of being. That means it's bordered by non-being. Being itself, existence itself, is the only thing that doesn't come into being or go out of being. Everything comes, see, you have to listen to the language. Every single thing comes into being and goes out of being. The being that it comes into is ever-present. See, we think of a thing can come from non-being into being. No, nothing can come from non-being because non-being isn't there. Non-existence is not there for anything to come from it. So when we say everything comes into being and goes out of being, the being is actually what is there. And what is the being is not an object. If it's an object, it's always coming into being and going out of being. That's what happens to objects. Anything that exists in time is bordered by birth and death. The only thing that's not existent as an object in time is the Paramatma, the ultimate subject. The ultimate subject. You can take your body as the subject, your body, mind, sense organs as the subject within duality, but they are all objects that are experienced. The ultimate subject, the Paramatma, Paramatma, the Paramatma, the ultimate subject can't become an object, because then what is it a subject? What is its subject then? So the Paramatma, the ultimate self, the one that is the real self, is the one that can't become an object. If I can't become an object, if I can't be objectified, then I'm free of time. To be bound by time, you have to be able to be objectified, to exist within duality. Yourself can never be objectified to participate in this dual world. So just like if you think of it in terms of the dream, the whole duality comes from you, is sustained by you, the duality comes enjoying, if I use the language of these two verses, the duality goes from the unmanifest akshara purusha, the maya, the karana sharira, the causal body, comes enjoying my being, the uttama purusha. That incidental attribute that we call maya is in unmanifest condition, manifests as this whole creation, dream creation, goes back into unmanifest condition, all the while existing in me, the uttama purusha. I'm not coming into manifestation and going out of manifestation. I am the being. I am the conscious being which supports this manifestation and supports the causal condition into which this manifestation goes. That's the uttama purusha. That is me. And that me, this uttama purusha that is me, this conscious being that I am, there's no duality for me because I'm not objectifiable. And if I say now, there's no duality for me, that I am the uttama purusha, then how many me's are there? Because if there's no duality for me, for conscious being, then how many me's are there? There's so many bodies, there's so many minds, there's so many sense organs, there's so many jivas floating around. But how many me's are there? Because me, this conscious being that is me, is not objectifiable. Now, you, from your standpoint of your upadi, these are body, mind, sense organ upadis talking here, including this one, right? Each one of us enjoys a non-objectifiable me. What I'm saying, what I'm unfolding, is not just for me, this upadi. Every one of us is the truth of every one of us. Yourself, the self that you are, the Paramatma, the uttama purusha, yourself ultimately is not objectifiable. So you are not participating in duality. Because you can't objectify yourself, you can't look at yourself. You can't have a subject-object relationship. You can't. There's no way to objectify yourself to differentiate yourself from anything else. Everything that I can differentiate one thing from another, I must be able to objectify it. Like I can differentiate this body from that body. I can differentiate this thought from this thought. I can differentiate my sense organs from your sense organs, or my eyes from my ears, right? But I need to be able to objectify things to differentiate them. How do you objectify conscious being? You can't look at it. You can't hear it. You can't see it. You simply are it. And you are self-evident as consciousness. But what? How many of us are there? What makes me, this very personal me that is me, different from you? Are there two me's? If there are two me's, we need to be able to objectify them. There are not two me's. There is only one me. And that me, now that when you say me from your standpoint of your mind, you're recognizing, I have the Uttama Purusha, that is me. You know, this me illumines this mind. The me, what makes me, what is the me experience? The me experience belongs to me, to the conscious being. This me illumines this mind. Mm. I'm saying, yes, this me illumines this mind. Mm. It illumines all minds. It illumines Ishvara. It is the me of Ishvara. That there is only one me, and the me experience does belong to that me, and that me experience is me. It's just there's only one of us. You may think that somehow your mind is required, a requirement for the very personal me experience that makes me me. No. The me experience that makes me belongs to me, to consciousness, right? That the consciousness is that. And so when the whole universe goes away, what is left? Because this is the akshara, kshara, akshara, kshara, the unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest, manifest, all taking place in the Uttama Purusha, the ultimately conscious being. Say when the whole universe is an unmanifest condition, what happens to me? Nothing. What happens to you when you wake up from a dream? The whole, whoever you are identified with is gone. In fact, your whole universe is gone. Does it matter? It's so uncanny. It matters not at all. Yeah. You're identified with that character. You had all this world going on. There's a creation. You had a life, whatever. The whole thing, gone. And nothing has happened. So much has happened. Nothing has happened. So much has happened to you, nothing has happened to you. To the me is inviolate, free of time. That is the moksha. Moksha is the recognition that I'm free and that nobody can do anything about it. Swamiji will joke, I can't do anything about it, and even Ishwara can't do anything about it. It's Ishwara's condition also. It's Ishwara's me. There's only one me. And Ishvara can't do anything about his me. The whole Maya Upadi cannot do anything about it. It's like, it's a different order of reality. The Maya is a different order of reality. It's like, say you have a complex, very real, the most real dream. And in that dream, you start scheming, you know, because you're realizing there must be some sort of underlying reality. You know, let's try to do something to it. Let's do something to it. This underlying reality that must be there. And you can't. There's nothing you can do. Because it's mithya, it's a different order of reality. There's no way to touch your being. That's why in earlier verses, and I think it's in maybe chapter 2 or 3, I don't remember, chapter 2 or 3, it says, you know, the wind cannot dry me. You know, the earth can't make me muddy. The fire can't burn me. A sword cannot cut me. Nothing can happen to me. Nothing can be done. And that's the freedom. When you recognize that the self that you are, see, the self that you are and always have been, and have always recognized as you, when you realize that this you, this very most beloved you, is actually independent of this body. This body, mitya, totally depends upon you, for you are itself, like the clay pot. You are itself. But when this body dies, just like in the dream, nothing happens to you. That's the satya-mitya relationship. It depends on you, but you're free of it. Same with your mind. Your mind totally depends upon you. You are itself. But for you, the presence or absence of the mind is absolutely irrelevant. The mind has nothing to do with your being. It doesn't make or break you. It doesn't make you better or smarter or anything. It doesn't do anything to you. And so what about what happens when your mind realizes that its self, its very self, is free? The me of this body, mind, sense organs that makes me is free. It absolutely free. It is whole and complete and the very self of Ishwara. It's the very reality of the whole creation. It's not, oh, there's some capital S self that's the reality of the creation. It's this simple, very kind of strong, unassuming, absolutely complete, full, simple me is the truth of the whole. And this whole, like the dream, is of a different order of reality. It's mitya. That's what I mean by different. It's not that it's a woo-woo thing. It's that it's a different, maya is a different order of reality that cannot be categorized as real or unreal. That's why we call it mitya. Just like the pot is a different order of reality than the clay. Right, the pot has no being of its own, but its experience. The snake is a different order of reality than the rope. Totally depends on the rope is free of it. Pot totally depends upon the clay, clay is free of it. This universe totally depends upon me, the dream totally depends upon me, but I am totally free of it. And there's no big deal, there's no big deal about this recognition in terms of having to be some sort of a yogi who has an extreme mental state of experience. That's our problem because of this huge word, enlightenment, liberation, enlightenment. You know, being an enlightened being, we think of Jesus walking on the water, being an enlightened being and all of this. It takes the reality away from us. Mm-hmm. It takes the self away from us. Where actually what needs to be recognized is yourself that is there ever-present as the self of every experience you have. It's not about having an exalted experience. It's about recognizing yourself as the self of every experience you've ever had and ever will have. And recognizing that that self is ever free, never tainted by any experience at all. And so, yes, we do have to quieten down our minds to have a moment of quiet so we can recognize this. Because the mind is so active. The mind is so active and involved with itself and involved with maya. So active in the world, you know, that we can't get it to be quiet. To notice the simple thing that's being taught. That's what this whole Antakarana Shuddhi is about, this purity of mind and all of that. Is just having the mind gain that mumukshutvam, that desire for liberation, because you realize you can't find the truth out here. You can't find anything stable out here to hang on to. Mm. So is there anything real? Mm. So the mind starts becoming one that inquires and has a little bit of inner space to really look at the situation. That's what we need. That's the Antakarana Shuddhi, this purity of mind, means the mind has enough shanti, enough peace to be able to think about things, to be able to look inside, to recognize the difference between the ever-present flowing thoughts and the one who's present to them. It takes a little bit of relaxation in the mind to be able to recognize that. But the recognition, there is no distance between your being and the thoughts. There's no distance at all. There's nowhere you have to travel. You just have to be quiet for a minute. So that this pramana can direct the mind to you, to that recognition. You know, it's much simpler than we think. It's much simpler. It's much, much simpler than we think. But of course we have lifetimes of samskaras, lifetimes of conditioning to only focus upon those things that we experience, subject-object experiences which within duality. Now we have to recognize the one for whom all of these subject-object experiences, you know, are there. Yourself illumines the subject and the object. Yourself, the Uttama Purusha, is the self of the subject and the object, the knower and the known. The self of the knower is the self of the known. Right? And so that's a different, it's like a depth recognition rather than a lateral, you know, linear recognition. And so our mind isn't used to that. And that's why we have to teach it over and over and paint these pictures and, you know, get that, push it in there just at the right time. When the mind is just in the right condition to see it, that's what has to happen. You're teaching over and over and over all of these things. All of these verses, all of these texts, they're all, like Swamiji says, they're all like an elephant dancing on a post because they're saying the same very simple, simple truth over and over again, many, many different ways, so that the mind has nowhere to hide. Because the mind feels insecure. The mind feels like its life is at stake. The mind freaks out a little bit, thinks its life is at stake because the superimposition of your being on the mind is so total. Nothing's at stake at all. But the mind thinks so much that the me belongs to it and you're threatening me. Rather than thinking that, oh, the freedom of me is being revealed. Because that adhyasa, that superimposition, is so much, the mind thinks you're trying to kill me, the very me that is the beloved. And actually what's happening is you're going to have to recognize that that me that is, you think is you and is the beloved, is actually the self that is free, that is you. Right? The pot is the clay. Right? The pot is the clay. What else is it? But the clay is free of the pot. So the mind has to recognize that, ah, the me that I am is free of me. The me that I am is free of me, right? But it's not a death of the me, it's the absolute freedom of the me. And then when the mind finally understands, it, all that bhaya, all that fear is gone because there is no loss of self. It's the exact opposite, in fact, that myself cannot be lost, no matter what I do. It can't be lost. It can't be hurt. No matter what traumas I have, no matter what hell I have to go through, the one that is illumining that, you know, is free. The one that's present to the very being of all of the trauma, of all of the hurt, of all of the growth that I have to go through, that being is free. For me, there's never been any trauma. There's never been any hurt. There's never been any psychological problems. There's never been any abuse. There's never been anything. Nobody can hurt me. And so these relative problems we have to take care of. But once I recognize that myself is free, then the relative problems, whether they're simple or severe, the relative problems have a home that is inviolate. The home is Ananda. The beloved was most dear to me is inviolate. So that's the beautiful knowledge, beautiful knowledge. Let's stop there. Let's take a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Yeah, Sky and Tana, I saw you left and you came back. I'm glad you're back.
Well, that was beautiful, thank you.
Yes, my pleasure. This chapter 15 is why they memorized this chapter. Because it's the whole, it has the whole vision in it. Those two verses together are quite complete also.
That's what they chant before.
Before an eating, usually, yeah.
What's the relationship between the Akshara and Kishara Purusha? In other words, is it temporal that, you know, at one time it's there's the unmanifest Maya,
yeah,
and then it becomes manifest for a while, and then it becomes unmanifest? Or is there some sense in which the unmanifest or the causal is coexisting with the...
I know what you're saying. The causal itself has to be continual because it has to be something in which the manifest can go back into.
Mm-hmm.
So that causal structure has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying, which is an interesting question, is like when you think of the redwood tree, for instance,
mm-hmm,
when that causal condition comes into manifestation, what has happened to the causal condition? You have to be able to say that the Maya is still there, right? But it's in manifest condition. But you can't destroy the causal condition because otherwise it couldn't go back into causal condition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best I can do with that one.
Okay.
Yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But they say that for Ishvara, when the creation is in manifest condition and the causal condition then goes into manifestation, but it has to remain there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, so it has to be structural, otherwise it can't go
right,
back
right
there.
Yeah, sort of like we would think maybe in psychology that the unconscious is there even when one is conscious and experiencing day-to-day life, yet there is some structure, so to speak, or something there.
Yeah, and even Jung will say that with the,
yeah,
what we mean by the collective unconscious. He changed the name eventually to objective psyche, because collective unconscious had the idea of one big universal collective unconscious, rather than for each individual, there's the objective psyche, which then accrues all of the information into the unconscious. But there's,
mm-hmm,
this shared human objective psyche that all, just like we all have a human body, all the bodies are different, but there's a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can recognize all human beings. So we all have a psyche also,
mm-hmm,
that is responsible for this,
mm-hmm,
the, like a mechanism, like a structure. So say you have the Maya Upadhi, and this Maya Upadhi is in causal, we say it's in causal condition when nothing is manifest.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever goes into manifestation can go back into that causal condition.
Mm. Like the root or something.
Well, yeah, but with a root, you don't think of the tree going back into the root.
Right.
It's a little bit different.
I find that really confusing to say that there's this thing. First of all, why is it called causal? But also to assume that there's this thing.
Well, it's called causal because of your experience. Well, it's something that's a way of even talking about experience. Because, like say, for instance, when you go into deep sleep, everything about you, your mind, your memories, everything is in causal condition. And we say causal condition because the same you comes back out.
You well, see it's not I mean? Really, it's the same only in the sense that you could say Maya is the same. But Maya, you know, or that I mean, the world is constantly changing and it's different. When I wake up in the morning, things are different.
True.
For me, my body's changed a little bit. You know, there's something that seems to be the same, but
what we
that's
would,
the me.
Yeah,
the
but
same.
What we would say there is that there, even though that's true, the body is always changing, the thoughts are always changing, there's still what we call a sukshma sharira, a subtle body, which keeps the identity. The subtle body is always going to be enjoying the self.
It's a jiva.
Yeah. Subtle body will always enjoy the self. That subtle body in your mind has what we call, I'm just saying these Sanskrit words so you know that there's words for these concepts, the pratyabhijna, which means when you wake up in the morning, you'll say something like, you might not say it, but you could say it, that the one who's waking up this morning is the one who went to bed. You could say the one who was a little boy, wherever you grew up, is the one who's an adult now. So there's a, your mind continues to identify you with the series of experiences where you don't identify, like Edward's experiences, with you. Right? So there's a continuity.
Well, I don't have experiences, Edward's experiences. I have experiences of Edward.
But yeah, but
I don't
you
have
no, that's right, you don't. You only have your experiences, and that's where this pratyabhijna means that, say, I have an experience yesterday. I had an experience yesterday. And now I have a different experience today. But I can say, I, the one who am having this experience yesterday, today, am the one who had this experience yesterday. That's what we mean by pratyabhijna. So you can say, I, who am awake now, I am the one who had a dream last night. So there's something there that's that has a constant, that there's an I that's continuing in spite of these totally different experiences.
But isn't that the ahankara?
Yeah, but the ahankara, there has to be something to keep the ahankara identified with all of these different experiences that are being negated.
Why does there have to be something?
Well, just because there is. What do you mean?
But that's my question. I don't know. The ahankara seems to be this thought that comes up, that's the I thought, that attaches to this body, mind, sense organs and its experiences.
Yeah.
But it actually comes and goes also. I mean, isn't it possible that just like the ahankara's attachment to the body, mind, sense organs is false in a way? Based on
it's based on ignorance.
Yeah, it's based on ignorance.
Yeah.
There's a falsity about it there. Maybe the sense of continuity is also false. That it's from the same, it comes from the ahankara.
But what's your experience? Your experience is that the continuity isn't false, is it?
Well, it's not continuous. I mean, because I go to sleep and I'm gone. At least in my experience of me.
That's why, that's what we call about causal conditioning. See, I think what you're doing, you have to stick really tightly to your experience and simplify a little bit. Like if I, it is my experience that when I go to bed, I'm the one that wakes up, right? I go into a condition where I lose all track of time, all track of duality and everything, but I'm the one that comes back awake. Now say you don't, you say, well, I don't think that's true. Then we're getting into some realm of experience that I don't really know what you're talking about, because I'm talking on a simple level. If you can't say, I went to bed and then I got up, or I went to bed and I had a dream and I slept well, if you can't say that, then you're getting too complicated. You say that this body, it maybe it's going through modifications and the cells are all changing and all of that, true, but it is this body, you know, that went to bed last night, not another body. In spite of all of the growth and the aging and all of that, it is this body that is growing and changing and aging. It's not dead yet. So this body is it's this body that's going through all of these modifications. It's this mind that is maturing and that used to feel this way or get angry about this and now has gotten over that. So it's this mind that has a continuity of it's changing, but there's a continuity, a recognized continuity. This body is changing, growing from childhood into adulthood and old age. It's changing, but it has a continuity. And the only thing in this whole thing that is absolutely not changing is the Atma, is the self. But this continuity is what I'm identified with, not somebody else's continuity. This thought flow, I'm identified with, not your thought flow. And it's this thought flow that goes into causal condition and comes out. Because I come out with kind of the same set of memories, the same set of experiences.
You same
know,
name.
Same name.
See, I don't see why that necessarily means there's... What is causal condition? That's where I'm getting thrown off. And it's... I mean, there is some kind of sense of continuity.
Yeah.
Not sure how real it is, whether it's mitya or what seems like...
Well, it is
mitya,
right? It is mitya.
But how does it then necessarily follow that there's this causal condition, and what is the nature of the causal condition? Is it...
Well, what if you took
it
like this? If that we're talking about causal condition simply as a way, using words to define your experience. All of these words are actually pointing to your experience, because in the totality of your experience, there's something that we want you to recognize in the totality of your experience. Now, we can say, all right, there's a waking state. We're just talking about we're naming your experience as a waking state, and what that means is that your mind is awake to your sense organs. Your sense organs are awake. So you're having sensory experience. That's the waking state. The dream state is when the mind is awake, but the experiences I'm having are not being generated at that time by the sense organs. That's the dream state. You can have like a waking dream, you know, where you're daydreaming or something, but your mind is not at that time using the sense organs. That's the dream state. So we're defining your experience. What is the deep sleep state? Well, the deep sleep state is when the sense organs are not in operation and the mind also is not in operation. So we say at that time, the sense organs and the mind are in causal condition. We say causal condition because it's not that they don't exist anymore. It's just that they're in their causal condition. They exist, but they're not functioning.
Unmanifest.
Right? They're in their unmanifest condition, causal or unmanifest.
Why the word causal?
Because
it suggests that they cause everything else. Maybe I'm missing. I mean,
cause is throwing you off.
Yeah, it just. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that word is chosen for.
Well, if you say something's in its causal condition, it means it goes back into its material cause. It's not like it causes something. It goes into its material, back into its material cause.
Okay. What's the Sanskrit for the cause?
Karana. Karana.
Okay.
The Karana Sharira. The Karana Karya. Okay, if we say Karana means the cause, the Karya is the thing which is caused. Right? So say the Karana is the clay. The Karya is the pot. Then we'd say the karta is the pot maker. The karta, the doer, the creator. Now I'm using clay as a, like if I were to make a clay pot. I've got the karta, the one who makes the pot. I've got the material. And then I've got the thing that's created. So the karana is the thing, and the karya is the thing that's created. So say your mind comes into manifestation and then it goes in out of manifestation, but it still exists.
The material cause, we call those, right?
Yeah, that's the upadana karana. But so think like this. The mind comes into manifestation, that means it's operational, okay? And then it's not operational. It's an unmanifest condition. Then that same mind comes out of unmanifest condition.
Okay.
So does it work better to say avyakta, just unmanifest condition?
For me, yeah.
Okay, then let's say that. That's fine.
But you know, also it kind of explains how everything comes out of ignorance. Avijja, or
in which way?
Ignorance, well, because in the causal state, one is ignorant of everything. I mean, there is
that's,
no... Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
But that but might throw him off right now.
Oh, it that helps me.
Yeah.
It does help me.
I have a quick question. Is the causal state linked with Brahman? Is Brahman the causal state? And one question, does the causal state ever change into another? If it depends on the self,
we would say that the causal, for in terms of Brahman, with the total, what we call the samashti upadi, means the total maya. That is infinite. There isn't another. There are not two mayas. There's only one maya. Because it's infinite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so infinite means there can't be two.
Okay. I just wanted to know if, because you said that even Ishwara has the self, which is the self that is always present,
yeah.
Consciousness. Does Ishwara ever change? Is there another Ishwara that comes
no.
about?
No.
Just...
When I said Ishwara has the self that you are, this
right.
me, is the self which Ishwara is. There's only one self.
Okay, I get it.
You got that right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's also only one Maya Upadi. There's only one Maya. That Maya is infinite.
Okay.
It manifests as the whole creation with all the dimensions, all of the different lokas. You know, there's many, many different dimensions, some more subtle, some more gross, hell worlds, heaven worlds, whatever the Vedas are saying. But all that exists within duality on every level, that is because of Maya. There's nothing beyond Maya within duality. Maya is what's responsible for duality. Now say... Duality means everything that exists within time and space according to the Vedas, according to the Upanishads. This Maya that is the entire creation, all that exists within time and space, goes into manifest, unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest from beginningless time. That is the nature of the creation itself. It goes into manifestation, resolves over, I mean, many millions of years for one manifestation. But it does manifest and go into unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest.
Okay, and then within that picture, you know, the timeless timeless me.
The timeless me is not manifesting, unmanifesting. Timeless me's conscious being is ever present as is,
yeah.
Without any modification at all.
And it illumines, but it seems to me that also...
It illumines without any type of activity.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's consciousness.
But it seems like it's experienced. There's an experience of that.
There is an experience, but the experience is itself. It's not a dual experience.
Right.
Because
but
that's
is
what
there
we
a
mean
sensation
by...
of that experience? It's not a dual
it is
experience.
Its own yes, it is its own sensation.
Mm.
The me is not a non-experience.
Right.
It's just not objectifiable. That's why we say your being is self-evident. Its own its experience is not a dual subject-object experience. It's the experience of me. The me is its own experience. There's not somebody else experiencing it. There's no subject-object.
But
if you get rid of the whole creation, get rid of all duality, and what is shining there just by its own swarupa, by its own nature, is me.
It still seems to be, though, a different kind of sensation, a sensation that's non-dual, in a way.
Yeah, if you want to use the word sensation, yeah, it's non-dual. There's no subject-object, it's its own shining. That's why we say self-evident.
Mm.
Self-evident, or self-shining,
mm.
You know. We use examples like the sun. We don't have to bring in another sun to light up the sun. It is its own experience. It doesn't require anything to illuminate. It's self-shining. Consciousness is self-shining. It's its own experience.
So while we're sitting here, we can notice that, right? I mean,
we are that. Yeah, absolutely.
We are that.
You notice it all the time because it's self-evident. There's not somebody else in you noticing it. It is, it's noticing itself, not in any kind of dual way. Just as me. You don't, no, nobody is lighting up me. No. It's self-evident.
But now I need to ask a clarification question when you start talking about ignorance. Because, but you mean, either in manifest or unmanifest conditions, I mean, it's both ignorance.
You know, let me explain something about this. How long can I hold that here? I'll just tell this quickly, but this is important. What is Maya for Ishvara is Ajnanam for the Jiva. Now let me explain. We say that Maya itself, this infinite Maya, Sameshti, you know, the total Upadi, Maya Upadi, when it manifests as Ishvara, it's just what we call Vikshepa. There's Brahman plus Maya, which manifests as a creation. But that Vikshepa means projection. Has another component called avarana. Avarana means the covering. So we say that ajnanam, ignorance, has twofold capacity. Mm-hmm. It covers the vastu, it covers the thing that is there, and it projects something else. That's what ignorance can do. Like when we see the snake, there must be avarana, covering of the rope, in order to project the snake. So there's this twofold thing that happens with Maya, covering and projection. They happen simultaneously. The projection, do you understand that? Jiva.
But is that, I think I understand that, but can you set that equal now with manifest and unmanifest? Is there connection? I mean, is the covering and the projection connected to manifest? And
yeah, but let me go just a little longer. Maybe that will resolve. So, for Ishvara, what we would call the unmanifest Maya in terms of the experience of Ishvara would only just be like Nirvikalpa Samadhi, because there, the Maya Upadhi is still there, but it's in unmanifest condition, but there's no Ajnanam at all. So there's just Nirvikalpa state, and then there's manifestation of creation. So there's unmanifest, which is Nirvikalpa, but the Maya is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't go away, but it's totally unmanifest condition. For Ishvara, then Ishvara is just abiding as Brahman with the Maya in its unmanifest condition. And then the creation comes into manifestation, then Ishvara is just there still as Brahman, with now the no Ajnanam at all. There's just the manifestation of the creation. Okay. No Ajnanam, no ignorance for Ishvara, because the Maya Upadhi is manifest totally. There's nothing unknown, right? The whole thing is manifest. Look at the situation for the jivas that are within the manifestation.
Right.
Now for them, from their standpoint, there's just nothing but limitation in terms of the experience. They're looking around saying, what's happening?
That's
but from the, okay,
yeah.
So what is Maya and just Vikshepa projection for Ishvara is Ajnanam, ignorance, and avarana, covering. That covering is what causes the ajnanam, because of the limitation of the upadhi, right? The sukshma sharira, the subtle body, every subtle body is limited. Your subtle body is different than mine, is different than yours. Every subtle body is associated with a stula sharira, a physical body, and every subtle body in terms of what that mind can know is very limited by the sphere of the sense organs and the sphere of the different pramanas that we have, like the sphere of inference, the sphere of presumption, the sphere of using similarity. All of the different pramanas we have available to us are still extremely limited within their own spheres. And as an upadhi, as a physical body, here, the range that I have is very limited. In order to, like, I'm stuck in this loka, in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many other lokas. There's so many other dimensions. And so I have so much limitation. And there's
Manushya loka, right?
Yeah, Manushya. It's the Manushya loka. The Manushya loka. Yeah. Yeah, minutia. That's funny. I never thought of that. Yeah. But minutia means human. Human loka. So there's so much. What is just maya with vikshepa, the ability to project for Ishvara, is avarna. The vikshepa has this capacity of covering for the jiva. So what is maya for Ishvara is ajnanam for the jiva. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the avyakta, that unmanifest condition, which is called the causal condition, because it is the one, the avyakta is that because of which this, that out of which this creation comes. And so we say it's causal to the creation, because it's out of this avyakta, unmanifest condition that the creation comes, and into which it goes back.
But that's not a state of ignorance for Ishvara.
Ishvara doesn't have ignorance.
Okay. But for a jiva.
But what is just the maya upadhi for Ishvara is the ajnana sharira for the for the jiva. Because the jiva's upadhi is limited by nature, that there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like you ever had knowledge. You gain knowledge. But the ignorance of the jiva is beginningless, because it's built into the way the creation operates. When would the jiva have knowledge in terms of a prior condition? You gain knowledge now, but your prior condition, there was no knowledge, or you would have knowledge. You would remove the ignorance. Once you remove ignorance is gone. That's the thing about ignorance. It's beginningless, but it comes to an end. It's the only thing like that. You have to sit with this for a while.
Yeah, some of the things you just said, it comes out of causal condition. It seems like, to me, if causal condition, it's almost like a state of mind. It could be analogized to that. You could say you come out of it, but you also come out of uncausal condition, too, to go into causal condition. I mean, is causal condition a thing that you come out of? It seems like it's a place, and then this thing projects out.
We have to work on this later.
Okay.
This is another one of those problems, like, what was that really weird one? But you were using the word one way.
I'm the counter of experience.
Yeah, it's going to be something like that.
Okay.
There's something about this concept, causal, that is...
And out of.
Yeah.
Put
this
it all
thing,
together.
It's all meaning something else to you, so we have to figure it out, but I can't do any more right now.
Okay.
But I'm happy to work on it eternally.
But it is
eternal. I appreciate your eternal patience. Boundless patience.
Yeah, we have to do it over time, that's all. We have to work on it over time.